You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. Bonjour. Howdy. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Joanne Gates. We talk about her choices and challenges with motherhood and career. Now, I've gotten to have a bunch of conversations, a wide variety of conversations about the impact of family, family planning, parenthood on jobs and careers on this show over the past year. What makes Joanne's conversation a little bit different, in my opinion, is that what we're talking about is how she worked to keep her career and her existing job, because her story is that she spent 30 years in one company. That's pretty unusual these days. Joanne has a lot of career experience, which is what we talk about in this episode. But one of the groups of people who I think, as the host, might be most interested in listening to this story are actually people, women who are newer to the workforce and are thinking about this exact type of decision. How does family planning impact their career path in their own lives? So this is a good conversation. Let's get to it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Joanne Gates, are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am so excited to be here.
Yay! I start all my conversations with the same exact question. What part of the world are you in today?
Today, I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona. I grew up outside of Boston, a suburb outside of Boston, then spent 30 years outside of Seattle. So this girl needed sun. I'm giving the desert a try.
Very good. Well, you got plenty of sun and heat in Scottsdale, I think.
Yes.
All right. Next warm-up question. Share with us, and this is fun because it's Arizona, so you don't get much cold weather, I don't think. What's your favorite outdoor winter activity? And in Scottsdale, that can be like a warm weather thing.
Absolutely. I would say growing up outside of Boston, definitely had the experiences of I was into figure skating. My brothers played hockey and I wanted to play hockey. And my dad said, girls don't play hockey. So I got to figure skate and I did some downhill skiing. And, so certainly enjoy some of those. I will say as I got older, my winter vacations ended up being in Seattle. Let's go to Maui and find sun. So kind of my winter activity would be find some sun.
Yeah, 100%. I get it. I do. I don't think you're alone there. This episode will come out in February, which is I live in Florida, and that's like peak season for people who are waking up and they're like, we need some vitamin D.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. The topic today, not winter weather, actually, but we're going to talk about how your life and your career shifted with motherhood. Are you ready to talk about that?
I am excited to talk about it. Thank you for inviting me on.
No, I love it. I love it. One of the things that I think is really interesting and one of the goals that I have with the show is to try and cross over age groups. So I think this is a really wonderful discussion. You're somebody who has a very extensive career and you made this decision several decades ago, these decisions several decades ago. And what my hope is with conversations like this is that somebody who's in their 20s will get the benefit of hearing about how you made these decisions and your experience.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's one thing to talk to your same age girlfriends about it, but it's totally different to be going through the decisions at the time.
And it hasn't changed all that much, which is
right?
Unfortunate. We all want to leave a better reality for the next generation. And certainly that's been a lot of what I have tried to do. And I look at the state of things today and some things have changed and improved, but not dramatically.
And no. It's really, for some, it can be tricky because you can feel like things are changing within your own house or your living room or your community of friends. But the data on women in the workplace and other things like that and the pressures that young women are under are very, very similar. And that's a little upsetting, actually. So like there's a book, I think it's Backlash, but I could be wrong, where they reissued it after 20 years with a new updated thing. And the data is almost exactly the same 20 years later, which is terrifying.
Well, and since COVID and the return to office, so many women are leaving the workforce, or at least corporate. That's what my background has been. again. And I just see it so often. And so we'll get into it later, but that has become my kind of passion project, is helping women succeed in their work and personal lives and realize that you can be successful on both aspects.
Yeah, and yes, exactly. All right, so the impact, which we were just talking about, of motherhood on a professional career, a corporate career, is a common topic of conversation. I think people have been talking about it for decades. I'm 52. My mom felt like the only option she had when she had a family were, teacher because of the schedule. Nowadays, like, I was told that I could be anything. It was a massive shock to me to have kids and be like, oh, you know what? Preschool doesn't line up with the workday. But anyway, I talk about that all the time. I was like, ha, now I, all right, very good. So it really did surprise me. But share a little bit with us about your career before you were a mom. Like, what was your job? Who was your employer? What were your, if you remember, at the time, what were your career sort of dreams?
So we're going back into the mid-90s. So I'm a few years older than you, Amy. And my husband and I, it was before we were even married, had decided that we were going to take a move from the Boston area to Seattle. He had a job transfer available, and I had been laid off from my first job out of college. And so I was
Yes.
unemployed. And it is funny, his last name is Gates. And I would joke,
Oh.
oh, I'm just going to get married, send in my resume to Microsoft, and they'll assume that I'm somehow related. Spoiler, I am in no way related to Bill. But as it turned out, the manager who had let me go from that first job out of college had left that company, went to Microsoft, knew I was in the area, invited me to interview. And within about 6 months of getting to Seattle, I started at Microsoft.
And this was mid-90s. This is the dot-com boom.
That's
That's
right.
when, so yeah, this is when I graduated, and it was, I feel like we're coming up into probably what will be another version of time like this, because we're seeing the layoffs, and that is usually followed by innovation and stuff. But it was a crazy time to be in the job market. It really was, because in the tech sector, it was almost like they were hiring so fast you couldn't even like keep up.
Absolutely. And it was mostly people my age. I think I was 23, 24. I had only worked for a couple of years for a pretty stodgy company outside of Boston. And there at that first job, you could tell who was the most senior by the oldest, grayest man in the room, right? And so to go from that to tech, where people are wearing shorts, not
Yeah.
wearing shoes, and you've got the Bill Gates of the day with messy hair and still, like, I don't know, 20s, and he's the brilliant guy in the room. And so it was so energetic, and I loved it, and I felt like I was going to be there forever. And turns out I stayed almost 30 years. But it was the kind of place where they rewarded incredibly hard work and lots of hours. And a lot of folks started when they were either single or married, but without kids.
Yeah. What did you, can I ask what you studied in school? Were you like a
Sure.
technology major?
Yes, I have an industrial engineering and operations research degree from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst.
Very nice. Very nice. And so, okay. So you were interested in being in a company that had systems in it, and you were ready to dive into technology and so on. When you were a kid, if you remember, and this is not a great question, so we'll see if it lands, but was your concept of like your work future, did you have any idea of like get a job and stay there forever? Like, was that what you thought you would do? Is that what you thought what the work world looked like?
Not necessarily. My dad had a couple of different jobs, always in a professional environment as I was growing up. I have two older brothers who, at the time that I was going into even high school, they had chosen not to go to college. So my dad had always done the professional path is what's right for you. And I actually distinctly remember him telling me at a very young age, Successful people know what they want to do from a very young age, which told me if I didn't decide when I was young, there was no way I was going to be able to be successful. So I was like, well, shit, I guess I have to pick something. I'm probably like 10 or 12 at the time, right? I had an older cousin that had started in college. I remember asking her what she did, and she's like, I'm studying chemical engineering. I was like, all right, that sounds cool. Like she told me a little bit about it and glommed onto it. And I think my dad had told me, like, hey, you're good at math and science. You're probably going to be an engineer. I don't know how much of that I questioned, but so had decided pretty early that a professional environment was definitely what I wanted to do. I did want to go to college and get a degree. Started off in chemical engineering, didn't finish there because I was like, this is way over my head. I don't care about some of these things. And so combining business and engineering is what industrial engineering does, and it
Yeah.
was a much, much better fit for me.
That's spectacular. That's really good. So your dad was a professional, but you do also have, did your brother stay in trades? Like, did they stay? Is that where they stayed, or did they change correction, course correct?
One of my brothers ended up having a serious leg break and having to go through all this physical therapy, and that started his journey. I think he was going to be a physical therapist. Then he got a bio. He went back to co well, he went to college, got a biology degree, and it turned into his future more professional career path. But my other brother has done super successful in the trades. Most of his career was he was a realtor, super
Oh,
successful.
nice. Yeah. So
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting because it highlights one of the things that I think people have talked about. I mean, I was not alive for a lot of these conversations, but I don't think it's a new conversation. I think it just feels like a new conversation, which is where we put all this pressure on people at a very young age to decide what they want to do. And sometimes it works out. Notably, engineers sometimes know right on that they like puzzles and math. And although I don't know if they know what engineering is until they're older, but then people who are doctors and, nurses, they often know at a very early age
Sure.
that they want to be a doctor. And that's one of the examples that I was at some school thing when one of my kids was little, and this expert on children in education, they pointed out, they were like, the norm here is that you don't know, and the doctors are the exception. So like the, five people in the room here who want to be surgeons, they're the exception, not the norm.
Right.
And I was like, that's helpful. That's helpful because I know so many people who, followed a path, pushed to make a decision,
Yep.
followed a path through education, and then they're like, oh wow, no, I kind of like this in the classroom, but I don't like doing this at all.
Absolutely. I maybe we'll get to it. I have two daughters, and as they were coming up and trying to decide what they wanted to do, I was like, you got to find internships. You've got to test things out. If you're in high school and you want to do volunteer stuff, try to see what the job really is, because like you, I knew so many people, especially in engineering, that probably were told that they're supposed to be good at it and ended up maybe succeeding in school, but got into the workforce and they're like, I hate this.
Yeah.
And so, that's such a huge waste of time, money, attention, all of that aspect. So,
Yeah.
totally
No.
agree.
Yeah. No. I had one of my kids is an engineer, and they love physics. And when they were starting this study path, I was like, "So, do you want to be a physics teacher?" And they're like, no. And I was like, okay, so then let's do some thinking about what the job is at the end of
Right.
this that you might get. Because it's a different conversation. Because, like, universities, part of what they do is train teachers or
That's right.
professors. We would call them professors, right? So, all right. So, that's my rant on school. So, you're working at Microsoft, which I've got to say, having been to, it was, I think, the early 2000s when I was on that campus
Oh, cool.
just as a visitor, like, just to
Yeah.
see, but such a
It's
cool
impressive,
place. It's
right?
so, it's like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, right. It's so cool. I'm going to ask you a super invasive question. Then you can tell me to buzz off if it's too personal. So you're there. This is hustle time. This is expansion for Microsoft. This is, I mean, it's huge already at this point, but it's really a startup environment, really favoring working really hard, I would say. Were you in a situation where you were family planning and making these decisions in a strategic way, which as an engineer, I'm tempted to think that you're fairly strategic, but I don't know you. Or was it something that occurred and you had to like respond to?
No. We both knew that we wanted to have a family. And at the same time, our careers were just starting. and taking off, and I was working like crazy. And our weekends were like, oh, we finally have a few hours. We're going to sleep in. We have to do the groceries and the, you know, all the chores. So there wasn't really a lot of like free and downtime. And I thought, how the hell am I supposed to be a successful employee and mom? Like, where does this fit in? And I was lucky enough that my mom was home for all of the years until I went to school. And I think I know my husband had the same environment. And so we had this belief like, all right, if we're going to have a family, don't really want to go the daycare route, no shade, but that was what we wanted for our family, was to have someone home. And so we waited 5 years between getting married. I got married just a few months before landing that job, and starting a family. And a lot of it was the not ready, don't know how to navigate this, don't know what it's going to do to the career and how we're going to make this a success as a family.
So I think that puts you in a small group of people in a lot of ways, because I think that you're good at future planning and future decision making, which not all of us are. And you had some awareness of what you wanted to do. And you mentioned something that that is definitely, it's a topic, right? You said no shade on people make a different decision. This is a weird place in society where women sometimes, and maybe men, but let's talk about women. There's judgment, implied judgment, and like value statements that we make about the battle between, you know, staying home, working, daycare, you know, all of those things. I try my very, very hardest to stay out of it because I don't have an opinion on either side. And I've been, but I've been, I
It's like
worked for,
politics and religion. It's one
it is.
of those areas that there's a lot of emotion.
A lot of emotion. And when my kids were little, I was doing like freelance work for a portion and like from home. And it was so funny because people in the schools, they like assumed that I was at home, like cooking,
Sure.
you know, they were like, hey, can you come do this at like, you know, 11:30 at the elementary school? And I was like, why do you think that I'm available for this? But I do understand why they thought that actually. So walk me through what you guys perceived at the time. So you waited 5 years. Walk me through what you guys thought the challenges were going to be before it actually occurred. Like, what were you aware of? Daycare, you mentioned, and wanting to be able to be accessible while the kids were before they went to probably kindergarten, first grade was the
Sure.
idea.
Well, I just knew that my habits at work were, getting up at, say, 6 a.m. and being in the office from, call it 7 to maybe 7, right? And many of the nights, my husband would be the one to make dinner or order the pizza, whatever it was. And I just logistically did not know how I was gonna, okay, what does this mean? I'm gonna need to not go until 8 or 9 in the morning and then leave at 3:30 or 4. And in the, call it mid-90s, late 90s, we were just starting to get laptops. So the whole
Right.
idea of working outside of an office didn't really exist,
Yeah.
right? Like it was, sorry that I'm definitely on the older side. So this is before so much of the technology that we just take for granted these days. I
Yeah,
think my
this
first
was,
laptop was
yes.
like 4 inches thick and about 20 pounds.
This is
So,
still the mid-90s, is still dial-up home internet.
yes.
And mid-90s, I mean, it was the beginning of small personal phones, but we're talking like the Nokia phones with
Yes.
the keypad, like texting was ridiculous.
Even when I
Yeah.
had my daughter and she was born in 2000, we still my husband had a pager.
Yes.
Like so it I may have had a cell phone, but you didn't turn it, it wasn't on all the time and
Right.
all those kinds of things. So it just to set the stage, you didn't have the ability to work anywhere at the speed that you needed to, like you do today. Ultimately, what we decided was he was going to be our stay-at-home parent.
Okay, so you guys made a decision, which is that you were going to have one person at home when the kids were there. And so you were having the conversation. The conversation that people have is who's going to sacrifice so many years of their life and how does it fit into the family budget
Yeah.
and the career trajectory. What, so you're working for Microsoft. Did you have, and what, and are you in the like sort of operations department, or what department were you in?
That's right. In operations, entry level, these are somewhere around, stock was not going crazy. I was very much in the how are we going to make our life work? We had a mortgage at that point, on one income. So
Yeah.
it was, the ramen. I felt like we were still in college in
Yeah.
terms of the scrapping to get by to be able to live on one income. Microsoft had so much career opportunity. The benefits were absolutely the best. And I just had the work ethic and work drive far greater than my husband at the time. He was kind of like, yeah, work is what allows you to pay the bills and have fun. And I was like, no, I love what I'm doing.
Okay.
And so that was the combination that made it the right decision for us. Very not traditional. He was definitely the on an island in terms of there were rarely any other stay-at-home dad. So very lonely for him in the journey of trying to have the network that stay-at-home moms have is very wonderful.
Yeah.
And it can be he had his own challenges.
Do you remember the movie from the 80s, Mr. Mom?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, that's so they, I mean, that it's a comedy and it's not at all realistic. It has the famous scene for anybody who wants to watch it on YouTube. It has this amazing carpool scene with like school drop-off scene that is still accurate today, where oh, who's the actor?
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton drives the wrong way into the school carpool lane and gets
Oh.
yelled at by the other drivers, and it's still very funny. But and so, and like we were talking about early on, it's like that conversation, which is fiction from the 80s, you know, is one person making a concession so that the American family can thrive. And it is, would you say, and this, would you categorize it as most of the conversation and most of what was driving this was financial decisions for how you guys could financially continue as a unit with kids?
Predominantly, because I would have, you idealize what a stay-at-home mom may be able to do, and I'm very social, and I knew that I would, find my network and all of those kinds of things. So that was not something that I was opposed to, but it really just came down to, look, we're now in a city that we don't have any family, and I've got this great job, great benefits. It definitely has the income potential over time. And if you're willing to give this a shot, we can always change it, right? If we're a year in and this isn't working, daycare is definitely an option. But we were, we're bold enough to give it a shot, and it ended up working out for us.
So very cool. All right, very good. Now, so you shared in your pitch that this could have been an exit for you. You guys did
Oh,
consider
yeah.
it. You did consider it. What was
Well,
the corporate culture, if I can ask, regarding parents and moms at Microsoft at this time?
so I certainly don't know what the stats were, but it was not very common. Women were still, substantially underrepresented in terms of population in all of the different technical parts of the company. And part of the reason where it could have been an exit was, I get pregnant. I don't know what you do and don't tell your boss. My
Right.
boss is also a, call it mid-20s guy. He's not used to managing women. I do recall he was married and had several kids of his own. And I'm now thinking, okay, 100% of the finances are on me. I am the sole breadwinner. I need to make sure I keep showing up, keep doing a good job. And as it's getting closer, my manager says to me, oh, well, when you come back from maternity leave, if you come back, we'll put you on easier projects. And I was like, F no, buddy. Like, I am coming back. He fully expected that I was going to resign after my
So,
maternity leave.
what's interesting, and people can call me out on this if they listen to this and they think that I'm wrong, I actually think that that conversation that he had with you was probably illegal under the like labor laws, right? And yet, even to in my experience, also like completely inappropriate assumptions made by all of my coworkers,
Yep.
you can't hide. Most of us can't hide that they're pregnant. Like, so it's like you show up and it's like, hey, did you gain 25 pounds just around your
Correct.
belly button? And so people know, and then it's a weird situation. And I'm not an expert on labor laws and things like that, but it is supposed to be a protected class. Like your job is supposed to be protected. And yet most people I know who work in companies, big companies, I've never had I wonder if it'd be totally different if you worked at like a company that was like women top down, like that would probably, like it might be completely different. But there is this season of people like having awkward conversations and making assumptions about what you're gonna do. So even at a in a a culture forward spot like Seattle and Google, you ran into this assumption that you were probably not going to come back, and that if you did, you would need concessions. So that was the
That's right.
culture battle that you first ended up with.
That's right. And I had to ask, there's some statistic about when men have their first child, their salaries go up.
Their salaries
And
go
when
up, yeah.
women have their first child, their salaries either stagnate or go down. And I didn't feel like I should have had to tell my boss, but I said to him, "Hey, listen, he's already resigned. He is staying home. I need this job. I love this job. I am absolutely coming back, and I don't want to be sidelined and, put on some, I don't know, back burner kind of projects. The way you made money and got promoted at Microsoft was if you were on big time projects and you showed up really well.
Yeah.
All of the money was in your bonuses, 'cause that's where stock options came into play, and then that turned into eventual promotions. And I mean, I felt like I had to like shake him by the shoulders. I think, and this is again, it was, late 90s now. I had my daughter in 2000, so I don't know what the laws were back then, but I think he was trying to be very compassionate.
Yeah, it's all with the best of intentions. Yeah.
Right. So again, like at the time, it wasn't like I was yelling at him, but it was the, "Hey, I am here. This is my career. And please do not sideline me because we've made this decision at a fam as a family." How many guys have to have this conversation? That just pisses me off
Yeah.
that
Yeah.
we have to, because obviously it's pretty apparent that we're having a child. And the question
Yes.
of, are you really going to stay? Are you going to be calling in sick all the time? Are you, going to have to leave because daycare calls? I'm like, all right, I guess I'll lay it out. He's staying at home. We won't have a daycare situation. I won't have my time split. He will be taking care of all those things.
But when you think, if you zoom way out, and you think about like what the implication and the judgment that's in those, like having to defend that you're going to actually stick to it is really, really, and I mean, so not everybody's going to feel this way when they hear it, but it's really intrusive and invasive. It's like, no, I've got the job and I'm doing the job. So who are you to assume that I'm not going to be able to continue to do it?
Absolutely.
And like you said, it doesn't change. There is a, I don't know if this is still true, but there are some stories and statistics about how once men become fathers, they're more likely to get promoted because they're like, oh, well, they have a family. And the mom in the room is the opposite. She is,
That's
set
right.
to administrative duty and asked to bring cupcakes because she's no longer available. I don't
That's
know.
right.
I have thoughts and opinions. I'll try and stay neutral and stick to your story. All right, so you educate your boss and you work through this. How did it feel for you, sort of trying to navigate that? What was the like? Was it stressful? Was it scary? Was it annoying? Like as you're navigating this in the young 20s, going into something that is a big change for you, how did you feel trying to make sure that this was happening for you and having these discussions in the workplace?
Well, because it was already something that I was worried about, it certainly was that trigger of, oh my God, it's already happening. I'm
Yeah.
getting somehow sidelined. And again, he's just put in his resignation. I have all of the financial responsibilities. Fairness is a very, very strong principle of mine. So, the Boston in me was getting pissed off.
Boston came
And
out.
yeah. And the like, what the hell? Like, why? Again, I was around a lot of folks that now, after 5 years with the company, I was seeing a lot of my coworkers whose wives were having kids,
Yep.
right? And they're obviously getting promoted and getting the cigars and the pat on the back. And I'm having to just kind of fight to be able to keep the seat that I had already successfully landed, was how it felt to me. And it certainly, I think I shortened my maternity leave.
I was going to ask you about that. That is how that
Yep.
people are afraid to take the full,
Yep.
which is very short anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
By my second, I was smarter, wiser, more confident. I not only took my maternity leave, but I added some FMLA to it. But the first one, I was like, I got to jump back in. And, you might not see me all that much because I have to doubly prove myself. And I think when I went back to the office, my daughter was waking up maybe twice in the middle of the night, and I
And what,
was
you must have been
still
exhausted.
absolutely. But
Yeah.
you slap on as much makeup as you can, put on the lipstick so it looks like you're alive, and you push on through and, go sit in the car and cry a couple of times a day if you need to, because
Yeah.
you're physically exhausted, you're mentally exhausted because the work is still pretty intense. And you're working with all men, so they don't understand the working mom reality. Again, they may
Right.
have had their wives and understand the mom challenges, but and then all the hormones, that was, I'm sure, just loveliness.
Right. That is a wild ride. That is a wild ride. The whole maternal cycle is a wild hormonal ride, I will admit. So you felt a lot of pressure to shorten the guaranteed. So there's two types of leave that exist still today, as far as I know, when it comes to maternity leave. And this is only for companies that have a certain number of employees. So like if you work for a mom and pop, you're totally unprotected, but you get, I think, 6 weeks of federally provided paid leave. And then you can do like disability after that, like short-term disability.
I thought
That sound,
FMLA, which is
is that
federal,
12? Is that federal?
I
Is
think
that
it's
longer?
12.
12. So I'm just wrong about that. 12 weeks. My
That
youngest kid is
that's what
19.
it was
So
in
yeah,
2004
no,
when
I think
I
that's right.
used
That's
it. And again,
good.
to tout how awesome Microsoft's benefits were, we got 12 weeks paid.
So 12 weeks
So
paid, and then the second time you had some disability that you could tag on.
that's right. That's
Yeah.
right.
And so, and that's another, look, when we think about the wording for that, we're considering raising a child to be a disability inside the workforce. It's just kind of a crazy, it's like when you think, it's like, it's one of those things like, am I disabled? Right. Then
Well,
again,
and I
yeah.
remember when I had to sign the maternity leave paperwork, it does have phrase in there that says, your exact job is not secure, but you will come back to like an equivalent position.
Right.
And
And
so
yeah,
that
you were
feels
probably
like,
scared.
am I going to have the same manager?
Yeah.
Microsoft is well known for reorganizations all of the time. And so much of your work experience can be great or awful based on who you work for and with. So yeah, it's definitely a feels a little bit Russian roulette-ish of, okay, everyone tells me this is not a problem and it's just the normal legal paperwork, but you are signing something that says, I realize this exact job might not exist when I come back.
And from a like from a business owner perspective, you can see how that makes sense, because if you've got somebody who's gone for any reason, you know, personal sabbatical, anything for 2 months, as a company, you might have to finish that project and then move on. But as an employee, as a disruption, it is scary. It is scary to think about, will my job be here? And within software, I don't know if this is still the way it is, but during the doc, there's like expansion and contraction within all these businesses. Like, hey, we're releasing these products, and now we're not. Like, so like there's like we hire a bunch of people, they work for a while, and then we like downsize and let people go. And as you're aging into this, and job security is your concern, you're also becoming more and more senior, which makes you more of a target to be let go if you can't justify your worth within the organization.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So that the stress was high. How far apart are your two kids?
4 years.
4 years. So you completed this cycle, started sleeping through the night, enjoying your job, and then you started over.
Yes. Yeah,
That's the
craziness.
way we do it.
And I think the second time, I had had a tendency of staying in the same organization, and until I really had kind of mastered something and had built up a lot of credibility and brand, if you will. And so by the second one, I had been at the company now 8 or 9 years. I was much more established of, I know I can do this. The stay-at-home thing is working for the family. Yes, it'll be more difficult with two than one, but we're going to make this one work. And I don't remember as much drama with the second, except many companies still don't know what to do with a woman who's been gone for 12 weeks. Like, I remember both times I came back and my computer just would not accept any passwords. And it was as if I was a brand new employee. And like, this happens quite a bit in a company this size. Like, why are we all acting like this some unicorn situation and I'm the only one that has left on maternity leave? Why do you make it so damn tough on us to come back and not be able to just plug right back in? You know, what are the meetings I need to attend? What are the projects I need to be updated on? Who was covering this work and how are we going to transition it? Again, at Microsoft is the only thing I can really speak to. We have an annual performance evaluation, and the HR definition is we're evaluated on the time that we are working. So if you were on leave for 3 months, that is put aside. And if you kicked ass for the other 9 months, then you kicked ass in your performance evaluation. But so many times I would be in a room with other managers and they would be evaluating women and be like, well, she did pretty good for 9 months, but she wasn't here for those three, so I'm giving her average. I'm like, bullshit, you are, buddy. That is not the definition of how you're supposed to evaluate her. And so, as being a manager and seeing what was happening to others that were in these situations, I was better able to protect myself, have more conversations beforehand of, okay, these are the tasks I'm supposed to be doing. This is, what's included, this is what's excluded. And going back to that fairness, each one of those micro or macro aggressions were just those things that would tick me off to the place of like, need to educate other women on, if you're getting ready to go on mat leave, how do you close your stuff up and put a bow on it so that you're ready to pick it up when you come back? What conversations with your boss or coworkers? What feedback do you want to get documented? Like, what is the body of work and, again, agreements that you need to solidify so that you don't have to wonder and worry that you're going to be getting sidelined when you come back? And then, of course, how do you start ramp up back again?
And so there's two sides, two versions in my experience, like just as a woman, there's two versions of these conversations sometimes. There's the corporate HR version of here are the rules and here's your paperwork. And sometimes there's a back channel conversation between women in an office that are like, here's the actual stuff you need to know. And here's the stuff not to tell your boss. And here's how you protect your actual decisions. Because, you knew what you knew what you wanted to do and it didn't change. But they do ask you to make all of these decisions and commit to them before you've actually had the child. And so there are tons of times where things, we'll pick one that's not very controversial. If you have a kid that has a medical challenge, right, then your facts change, your situation changes during that window, and you're in a position where you're. So it is, I think it's very interesting. Let's talk about this. You're in a big company, you're an operational engineer. So systems and processes, that's your wheelhouse. You find yourself sitting in their meetings, evaluating, like, this is not something that only happens every once in a while, and yet the culture wasn't changing. I have like this theory in my mind about why it doesn't shift, but what is it that keeps the bigger corporate, in your opinion, and just your opinion, not like I'm not going to hold you to it, but what is the thing that keeps these things from shifting in these big offices?
Well, I think one is that there's not enough women around the table to challenge the other kind of this is the way we've always done it thinking. And I've always been someone who's been vocal or curious and asked some of those questions of like, But it says this over here. It doesn't sound like that you're applying that philosophy in your justification. What's going on here? So I do think that that's one, because someone would say, oh, yeah, Steve did 12 months of work and Sue only did 9. So of course, Steve is going to get a better, evaluation than Sue. And it's like, sorry. So one is having more women or more diversity of whether it's economic, age, gender, all of the different aspects of our real population in a room. Because when it's too homogeneous, it is that groupthink aspect. And you can have managers or, vice presidents, presidents that have a point of view and no one wants to question it because you go along to get along. And so sometimes you definitely need those disruptors who are going to say, this is bullshit. We ain't doing that anymore.
Yeah, and
So.
the other thing that I find with parenting situations, I see it show up every once in a while. This is, that very specific situation of bringing a new life into the world, but I see it in other places. Once you're no longer dealing with something, so like once you're no longer dealing with elementary school pickup and like, cupcakes in the classroom, you stop thinking about it. And it's like not front of mind. And then even if you have a person who's been through that situation, sometimes they're not thinking of it and sometimes their opinions shift. So like I think about this a lot on like airplanes. Like so when you're traveling with kids, you're very sensitive. Very sensitive to other people traveling with small kids. And then most of the time people who've had kids, they're like generally like most of the community is pretty aware and sensitive. But every once in a while you run into people who will tell you. Like, that they have kids because they tell you, they're like, well, I've got 4 kids and 24 grandkids, and your kid shouldn't be screaming on the airplane. And it's like, I think to myself, I'm like, you know what? I think you've just forgotten. I
That's
think you've
right.
forgotten. So, and I find that. So it is, and that's where policies should work and should kick in if they hold, but it's kind of like a version of a like a not in my backyard thing. Like it's not my problem. I don't care. I'm moving on. And I think that that's when systems in big companies maybe don't work as well as they maybe could. Okay, so the majority of the time that I talk to people about the decisions that they make when parenting hits their life is that they don't fit in the corporate workspace anymore, and they opt out. Like, how do I make it work by working by opting out? Your story is different because you did stay at Microsoft for 30 years and you made it work for you, which I think is really, really there. And so, being a new mom is not the only exit challenge you had in these 30 years. You shared that you were able to overcome many of these. What were some of the other challenges that you overcame to be able to hold on to your career goals at Microsoft?
One that still gives me some pause is some of the trade-offs that I made to be able to continue my definition of being successful at both an employee and a mom. So, being in the operations world, and I had worked in our PC accessories. So, think of like mice and keyboards and things like that, that were, vital for Windows 95 and all the operating systems to work.
Windows
So,
95. I'm having bad memories. I came of
And I
age.
got to launch that thing. I was like a baby at the time, and so it was super fun and exciting. But when Xbox was starting up, they pulled people that knew something about physical
Like the
goods,
peripherals, sure, yeah.
right? To say we need folks that know operations and supply chain and all of these things. And someone that I had worked with went over to that team, and this team was completely secret, right? We do things in private buildings
With
and with
code
code names and
names,
all
yeah.
that. Right. And they said, you would be amazing in this team. And I think that may have been when I was pregnant with my second child. And I said, there's no way. There is no way I can work this. That job would probably have been nights and weekends. Because it was so aggressive and so amazing. And one of the folks who reported to me at the time in that role took that job and got to general manager, which was the level that I finally achieved after 25 years, about 8 years before me.
Oh, so watching somebody have the benefit of not taking the opportunity.
Yep. So
And it's
that's
just
one.
timing. It's just timing. It's like the Olympics are only every 4 years. It's like
That's
if you're
right.
not available at the time,
Yep. So
that's rough.
that one hurt. I still feel like I made the right decision. I was always able to, make it to my kids' school plays, never missed a birthday. I wasn't traveling crazy. And so I was very present. And I'm still okay with it, but there is that, like exactly what you said, the timing aspect of damn it, give me
Right.
another year kind of thing. But the last example that I will give you that really could have been that final exit. I was going from a, at Microsoft term, senior director looking for a role that would get me into the executive ranks, which is partner at Microsoft. I had been in a role for a number of years. I knew that role was not ever going to have the scope for me to get that next promotion. And I'm looking around, not sure what to do. Someone that I had worked with previously had reached out and said, "Hey, this team is looking for this particular role. It is scoped at a partner. They've been looking for like 6 months, can't find the right person. You should try. You have a lot of the skills. I know you're not at that level, but you should go give it a shot." I was like, "Oh shit. All right. I don't know if I can, but all right, let me jump in." In the interview, said to the hiring manager, "Listen, I'm going from leading a team of 12 or 15 people in one function, doing quite well with it. This is like 75 people, five layers of management. This is leading an entire organization. I am in. This is obviously scoped for the promotion that I'd like to achieve, but I'm going to need some help because I've never done anything of this magnitude." And the way it works at Microsoft is almost 100% of the time it's a lateral move, and then you have to prove your worth, and then you get the promotion.
Okay.
So you take on this huge, big job, hope that you're successful, and then you get the reward. Okay, so he says, "Absolutely, I'll be right here with you. You've got a good team." I move over. He gave me one massive goal. He's like, "The last two people that were in this role could not figure this thing out. There are some other business goals, and then there's some team goals of reduce the attrition, have a, better harmonized team." I jump in. I start nailing that big, huge goal that the other two general managers who were getting paid at the executive level had not been able to do, was achieving a bunch of other things. And on the people side, it takes a long time to understand what's really going on in a culture and what's driving people to be motivated, demotivated, stay or leave. And so I did not put enough weight on that and was focused on the business things because I was like, these are metrics. I can show my worth. As we're going through the year, I'm checking in with my boss and I'm like, "Hey, listen, I think I'm kind of kicking ass because like I'm doing the job of someone a major level ahead of me and I'm doing it at my level and we're having all these wins." And he's like, "Yeah, I think so. Yeah, like you're doing okay." I'm like, "What the hell do you mean?" So at the end of that first year, it's time for my evaluation. And he says to me, "Yeah, I rated you missing expectations. So you're basically
Is this
exceeding,
that five, like
meeting,
exceeding,
meeting or
meeting?
missing,
Right.
basically.
Okay. All right.
And if I ever wanted that big promotion, I had to show that I was exceeding, or else it could have been 3 years. Like it takes a long time to get to partner, and you have to have a lot of foundational, like you have a consistent success story." I was like, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm doing the job that two other folks that were at that level were not even as successful at." And he's like, "Yeah, I had to give you too much help when it came to managing some of the team dynamics." Like, asshole, this is the exact thing that I had told you I didn't know how to do and that I was going to have to learn. So you're telling me that when I asked for your help, I'm now being penalized for it, and you're disregarding all of the wins that I had. And oh, by the way, I went above and beyond and led a women's group to for our diversity and equity program, and like did these kind of pro bono things. I was like, oh my God. Like
Yeah.
this was, if you even said I was meeting expectations, I would have been disappointed because I really believe that I'm exceeding. And now I'm working like crazy. And if I had stayed in my old job, I would have been seriously paid a substantial bit more. So I'm doing all this at a lower net income. This is some serious BS. So I was beyond mad.
So
And
this sounds to me like from a culture perspective, this is a place where there's a policy that is promoted, like, hey, you can ask for help and not have a penalty, which does not match the actual experience where there's
that's
an
right.
invisible penalty. And so that's the way it sounds as you're telling the story. I just want to confirm that that's the understanding. Did you
Yeah.
find that within the culture you were able then to, there were ways for you to navigate that?
I ended up having to really dig deep and decide if I was going to leave that job and go find another one at my level that was going to be more like my old job and just kind of go
Within Microsoft,
quietly.
but within the
Within
okay.
Microsoft has a meaningful benefit that if you hit 55 years old and 15 years of service, there's a retirement benefit. And I was a couple of years away from that. And so I was not, I was very motivated to stay in the company. So like, do I quietly just tuck my tail, say, I guess this didn't work. I'm gonna go have some more normal work-life balance. It was causing a lot of stress in my family. At the time, my youngest was in middle school, high school, really struggling with a number of things, and I wasn't able to be as present for her. And I was making a lot of trade-offs for this job that was now not even, fulfilling in any of the aspects that I wanted it to. I was like, do I really just rage quit? My husband would ask me on a regular basis, let me know if you're rage quitting today.
I actually, my dad did that. My dad rage quitted. I called him one day and he's like, 2 years after retirement, he went in and somebody was like, good morning. And he's like, I quit. Like, that was the exact, and I was like, this is the conversation. Like, just walked right out.
Or the last route I could take would be to really advocate for myself and go above him. And that was what I chose
That's
to
what you
do.
did. Okay. And it worked out.
I had all my ducks in a row and had to really say, look, this is the facts of the matter. And that manager, that executive vice president was like, what do you want? Like, how do I keep you? What are you looking for? I'm like, you got to pay me. And I
Yeah.
don't think I can work for that guy again. Because I have zero respect for him, because he told me a line of crap all during the year that I was more or less on track, and now tells me that I'm missing by that much. And within about 4 months, both of those things were able to be resolved. Got
That's a
that
pretty good
promotion.
story. That is a pretty good story. What piece of advice, given that I've seen that play out in places where I've worked in positive and negative ways, because there's a lot of human elements in
Yeah, oh
this, the
yeah.
actual people that are doing it. And Microsoft is an established company with a lot of people
Yep.
whose job is to manage the culture, which if you're in a much smaller company, you don't have those
Yep.
tools. But what piece of advice, given that situation where you had a manager who was not advocating for you and was not protecting you within this culture, what piece of advice would you give somebody who's in a corporate environment now to intentionally prepare and protect themselves in situations like that?
We always talk about know your worth, but it is a matter of if you've got the facts and figures of these were the agreements and these were the results, you end up having the receipts, as they
Yeah.
say, right? Of this is, there's something missing. Help me understand how this is happening. Now, because I had been so close to rage quitting, I felt like I didn't have a lot to lose. And so this wasn't a matter of like I was bluffing, and if they said sorry, I was not willing to handle the consequences of that. I'm not a very risk tolerant person, so I had to v be very comfortable with I'm gonna go shoot my shot, and if that doesn't work, I'm definitely finding a different job or leaving the company if that doesn't work, because they have now just created enough scars. So I think knowing that what your exit plan is, kind of the Don't throw out the threat of leaving if you're not willing to back that up.
Right. Don't, yeah, they don't care. They're gonna be like, have a nice day.
Right. And right now, the current work environment is, a bit different than where I was in, I guess this was like 2018. And so in literally today's world, I think most companies would be like, yeah, there's the door. See ya.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a very much a right to work kind of environment. I think that,
Correct.
I mean, we're talking multiple six figures of specifically software engineers have been unjobbed in the last
Yes.
12 months. Funny, hilarious story that I lived through in my 20s. I had a boss that I was really struggling with, and so I was applying for jobs, and I went for an interview. The HR director of the same company that I worked for was in the lobby with me, also applying for a job and the same thing. So she went back. So it's all top secret. Nobody knows that I'm looking for a job. It's all secret, secret. And she asks me in the elevator, she's like, "So what's going on?" I was like, "I'm really unhappy with this boss," so on and so forth. So she went back and had, like, I don't even know what the conversation was, fly on the wall. Like, but it was like, "Hey, just so you know, Amy's really unhappy. How do you know?" I can't tell you, I have no idea how that conversation went. But yeah, I think that's very good advice about receipts. It's like, constantly be ready to defend yourself and know what the objectives are. 'Cause it's real easy in those performance reviews when people are like, here are your four metrics for the next quarter, just be like, okay, whatever, and walk out. But they can come back to bite you in the butt in these
That's
places.
right.
All right. So, in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. I want to
Okay.
give you a chance to tell everybody what you do now. So, you worked for Microsoft for 30 years, you did all these things. What do you do today?
So today I am semi-retired, and when I was leaving Microsoft, I just realized that I felt like I had developed a master's degree in women in corporate and saw so many gals who were trying to get that next promotion or wonder why they were getting the average or below average performance evaluations and they felt like they had deserved so much more. And so throughout those 30 years, I had coached and mentored so many women. So now I do that as an executive business coach. And I call myself a business and life coach for corporate women because it isn't just about how you operate in your kind of 9 to 5. Really, all of us that are in corporate are dealing with the mom guilt
Yeah.
and the time management and the I'm having a family, how do I negotiate or navigate that. And so I work one-on-one with clients and I also run a monthly women's mentoring circle group.
Very nice. I would say that that is something that has shifted from the 90s to 2025. So in the 90s, the messaging we gave young working women was lean in. It was like to
Oh, yeah.
compartmentalize your life, and you were two different people, a work person and a family person. I do think that in 2025, we have realized the common sense of like, no, I'm the same person 24 hours a day, and I can't just, shut off these other things. And I think that that's more practical because, what, that was a little bit of garbage there for a while. Like, it didn't
Yeah.
work. It was like, oh, yeah, today I'm at work. Oh, sorry, little Johnny broke his leg. I can't deal with that right now. I'm only in my work. That was never a real
That's
thing.
right.
That was
Exactly.
never a real thing. All right. You have a special offer for the audience, which is 4 steps to navigate your career journey. It's a workbook, and there's a link for this PDF that provides actionable steps to demystify the steps landing your next job or a job several years in the future. There's a link for everybody who's watching and listening, wherever that is. There's a link in the show notes or the description. The easiest way to get these links is often to become a member of the Imperfect Adulting email community, because then that link shows up in your email box and it's great, and so on and so forth. I do want to thank you, Joanne, for that very generous offer
You're
and for sharing
welcome.
your story. Are you ready for the
Absolutely.
final 3 questions?
I hope so.
Let's do it. Do you have a set morning routine? And if so, what is it?
Most mornings I get up, definitely have to have my first cup of coffee. And then a little bit after that, I love to go out for a walk, something that I had started during COVID. And so listen to a great podcast. I try to do anywhere from 2 to 3 miles. I probably 5 or 6 days a week. That is my
Very
morning
nice. Do you do
routine.
that even in the summer in Arizona?
I have been trying to do that. I have to get up even earlier before the
Yeah.
sun is up because it's so damn warm.
Oh my God. It is when I see the temperatures in the Southwest in the desert, I just am like, wow, those numbers are nuts. But all right, so
Yes.
if you want to relax, what are you most likely to do? Go out and get into nature, do a workout, meditation, watch TV, listen to music. What feels relaxing to you?
Definitely I've always been a TV gal. If I my most favorite thing is to go out for a meal with girlfriends
Okay.
and shoot the shit and just have the time slips by so fast.
Very good. Community and friends and social. I love it. Okay, if somebody gave you a $100 gift card, but you the rule is you have to spend it on yourself. Okay, so just $100. What is the first thing that comes to mind that you would buy for yourself?
I would probably go get a massage.
Love it. I love it. That's it. Joanne Gates, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
I am so appreciative of you asking awesome questions, having me here, and getting to share a little bit. So thank you so much, Amy.
Yay! Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.